The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Taxes show.
They say it takes a big man to admit he's wrong, but I say it takes an even bigger man to admit he's never wrong.
Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you that bigger man, Eric Metaxas.
Hey folks, welcome to hour two of the Eric Metaxas show. Let me just say this up front. I have a lot of friends, but very few of them are members or founders of the Falkirk Center at Liberty University. Charlie Kirk just happens to be one of the founders. Charlie, we're thrilled to have you.
Thanks, Eric. It's a great honor, and it's great to have you involved now with the Falkirk Center for Faith and Liberty.
I am excited. I just got some Liberty swag yesterday, and I'm going to be rocking it down Madison Avenue with the Looters later tonight, right before the curfew. I just want you to understand. I want to talk to you, of course, about current events, Charlie. There's so much going on right now. What's on your mind? Why don't we just start?
You have to say that it's a tragedy what happened to George Floyd, and it's also a tragedy what's happening to our country. And I've been very outspoken against the riots and the looting, and also some of the kind of intersection of false narratives happening right now in our country. I made a video yesterday that went very, very viral, where I was talking about the reality of police brutality in America. And the statistics don't necessarily line up with the level of outrage or the level of, let's just say, condemnation that is happening from the mass media. And so I'm not diminishing the fact that the police do overstep their bounds, but I think the better way to logically, to use like Aristotelian logic, is police officers are human, human are broken, therefore certain police officers will do broken things. And so I don't necessarily think that it should surprise us that certain individuals that are in the police force will do, you know, things that are outside of what we would deem them to be correct or necessary. With that being said, the moving average of police officers, they go to de-escalate situations that actually this idea that you can't walk on the streets without being gunned down by a police officer is materially incorrect. It's false. It's fake. And so even the Washington Post, that had a very questionable definition of what a unarmed black man is, because some of these individuals that they would categorize in that description were trying to go for the police officer's weapon, and they were in kind of very, let's just say, physical bouts. Last year, the Washington Post said 8 unarmed black men were killed by police officers. Now, that's 8 too many. I'm not defending that at all. But that's also not, in my opinion, not what we're hearing on television. I mean, if you didn't know the statistics, you would think this is a daily occurrence.
Well, and see, this is the thing. And by the way, you can tilt your camera down a tiny bit. We've got to. There you go. Better. I had Heather McDonald on the program yesterday, and she's giving us some cold facts, right? And I was reading recently also about this, and I thought to myself, what is helpful? In other words, we all know, we all agree, those of us who aren't insane, we know, we've always known racism is wrong and we don't want to live in a country. In other words, that's no longer a question. So the idea that people are kind of using anecdotal evidence and certain scenarios to gin up a kind of anger, I actually think that sets the movement back. In other words, if you actually care about racism and these kinds of things, you wouldn't be doing what some people are doing. And part of what you were saying about we were talking about this earlier as well, this idea that it's so confusing now. In other words, you have some legitimate people, maybe they're on the different side of things ideologically or politically than you are or I am. Nonetheless, we believe they have the right to peacefully protest. But those people are being mixed in with looters, with cynical criminals who know that they can get away with stealing things because they're part of this other group of protesters. It's very cynical.
Well, yeah. And so let's break this down. And the media and our politicians and our leaders are not going out of their way to try to distinguish the two. So the Attorney General of Massachusetts, and I'm paraphrasing here, but we can get the exact quote. She says, sometimes you have to burn down everything before you can rebuild it. Sometimes the greatest forests are built once everything is burnt down. She's talking to the Chamber of Commerce when she says this. You have Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who on her Instagram feed had a 101 guide on how not to get caught by the police.
Wait, before you go to AOC, let's go back to this is the AG in Massachusetts.
I'm paraphrasing. Actually, I have the quote here. I can read from it directly.
I heard it, and it was very clear that she was praising the arson and saying that oftentimes from great fires, we get.
I have the quote here. It says, this is a once in a lifetime opportunity. Yes, America is burning, but that's how forests grow. This is Maura Healey, the Massachusetts Attorney General, speaking to the Chamber of Commerce.
I just want to pause on that, Charlie, because that is something new in America. In other words, we've always had maniacs, crazy people, ideological thugs. But the idea that the Attorney General of Massachusetts, faced with arson of people's property, people's businesses, we're not talking about forest fires. We are talking about human beings who have built businesses. And she is cavalierly, it's the definition of cavalier, saying, so what? Good things can come out of it. I mean, that is extraordinary.
Let's go a level deeper, though, Eric. The left does not believe in private property. And this is something I've been talking about for years. And I've been challenged by the intelligentsia of the radical left by saying, no, we believe in private property. We actually look at their fundamental writings. They don't believe that individuals should be able to own property. And this is fundamental to Western society. This is where Plato and Aristotle really disagreed, not on many other things, but Aristotle said, no, private property is critical, that a human being can work hard and can see the fruits of their labor and to be able to own their consciousness and benefit from their imagination and from their creativity. Whereas Plato's view is like, no, I think that it could be, I think private property might be the root of a lot of what we're doing here. And Rousseau drew inspiration from this. And so a lot of these radicals have been indoctrinated in our universities to believe that somehow you can make something good out of burning down our entire civilization.
Right. Well, actually, look, let's cut to the chase here. What they're saying in part is that if someone goes into a store and takes stuff, that is redistribution of wealth without the government. In other words, all the government has to do is step back and let it happen rather than do it through their own bureaucracy. That's how how they're framing this.
And so you take that to actually just the material evidence right now in Minnesota. 170 black businesses, minority businesses, were burned to the ground. How does that help black people? How does that help black America? When 170 black businesses were burned, and so what's going to happen? You mentioned Heather McDonald. I just had her on my podcast. She's unbelievable. She's the best on this. Here's what's going to happen, and I predicted it the moment I saw these violent protests. Police officers will follow the instructions of the politicians, but they're also not going to go into a war zone day after day if they think they're going to get gunned down. So here's some fact. There's more black police officers that have died in the last 2 weeks than unarmed black men by police officers. Think about that. So Black Lives Matter, wouldn't we worried about David Dorn, who is the black police officer, 77 years old, that got gunned down in cold blood for defending a pawn shop from being looted and rioted? But no, that doesn't fit the narrative of the activists. And here's one of the biggest problems is the pathological aspect of this, is there's no reason, there's no dialogue. This is how civilizations crumble.
It's funny you say that because you're quite right. There is no dialogue, and the media, I every now and again, just for laughs, I will tune into CNN or MSNBC to see how they are bending over backwards to deal with something that is obviously difficult for them to process because it's counter to their narrative. And the things that they will say, Anderson Cooper had this look on his face the other day. In other words, they know that the only posture they can take is a kind of a pious somberness. Like when you're at a funeral, you just kind of put on this face. There's no time for joking. There's no time for pith. This is just about, we're just all grieving. And anything other than that, they have no room for it. We're going to go to a break. More with Charlie Kirk. Folks, don't go away.
But you ain't got a dime. There's no time for the fool. I just gotta get a message to you.
I'd rather have Jesus than silver or gold. I'd rather.
Hey, folks, it's the Eric Metaxas Show. I'm talking to Charlie Kirk with the Falkirk Center at Liberty University. And Charlie, you know, you could have combed your hair for this program. Some people are actually going to watch this on.
You know, I'm trying the William Wallace look because I feel that it's time for true rebellion.
You look fantastic. Listen,
thank you.
You and I are talking about the roots of what is happening. And we were just talking about the narrative. In other words, the biggest problem is that we used to have a journalistic class that would, they would try to cover both sides, and they have just jumped in with, I mean, we're seeing it with certain leaders. For example, Mayor de Blasio, his daughter was arrested. He was proud of her being arrested as though she had been arrested in front of an abortion clinic or as though she had been arrested doing something wonderful. But the New York cops, let's be quite honest here, they're not arresting peaceful protesters. They're dealing with real crime, people setting things on.
Yeah, I want to mention that, Eric, which is with the New York incident. This is where the work we do at Turning Point USA is so critical, because I've warned that whatever happens on college campuses will soon happen in the halls of Congress. Two of the terrorists, the domestic terrorists that were arrested in New York, and I don't use that term lightly, these are people throwing Molotov cocktails. So think of the extent of actions that have to go through to the point where you're holding a Molotov cocktail. They were lawyers that graduated from Princeton and Fordham. Lawyers. I have the names right here. I could read them. These were people that passed the bar in the city of New York that were in the top law firms in our country that were arrested for domestic terror, holding Molotov cocktails and throwing them at the police officers.
And let's be clear. Molotov cocktails, those are weapons of war.
This is not like a cosmopolitan, okay? This is...
I mean, I guess, you know, I was just saying, so the leadership class, and this is why you didn't go to college and why I scorn the college that I attended, they are no longer doing their job. And they're producing people like Mayor de Blasio, who's mm-hmm. thrilled that his daughter was arrested by cops that are theoretically under him, trying to protect property and so on and so forth. So he is signaling that he is not with the cops and he's not with the people who own the businesses that are being looted. He's making it clear that he is not for them. And we have people in the journalistic class who are similarly making it very clear that they stand on that side. And this is something unprecedented.
Yeah. And so just to close the point, it was Aruj Rahman, who's a human rights lawyer, graduate of Fordham, Collingford Mathis, 32 years old, prior Cashman associate, pretty nice law firm. They bill about $1,000 an hour, went to NYU and Princeton, you know, Molotov cocktails burned down the world. And so, but to your point about de Blasio, this is the furthest extrapolation of American leftism,
right?
Which is if you look at, they don't have grounding principles, Eric. So for example, you and I, we are yoked and grounded by the Bible. Like that, this is our framework, right?
And so at least we hope to be, right? In other words, we're not just saying that. We really believe in this thing called
yes.
truth, and we really want to do the right thing by everyone. You know, even if we screw up sometimes, we have a standard, and we will say,
that's exactly
yes,
right.
screwed up. Okay.
And so it is not moral relativism. So for example, looting in 1870 would be considered wrong under the Christian ethic as it is considered wrong today. But under the leftist ethic, it all depends on times and circumstances, and it's morally relativistic. It depends who's in power. It depends how bad you want it. And so this is what you see, this kind of very unhealthy relationship with the left, which is between this advocacy of chaos with coupled with a police state that they can deploy at their own wishes. So, for example, if you go to church, they will send the Praetorian Guard after you.
Right.
If you burn down the church at night, they will call you a righteous protester.
If it weren't for young folks like you, it would be difficult for me not to despair. But I keep meeting people like you, not quite like you, but, I have to say that we have to make our case. And this is the battle of our time. If you're as old as I am, you kind of think, wow, we've had an amazing run. Ever since I've been alive, everything's been pretty wonderful in America. We haven't had to fight those basic battles, the existential battles that had to be fought in 1860 and 1776. But here we are now having to fight to make the case for things that we thought had been settled a long time ago, like the rule of law, like private property, caring for your enemies. In other words, treating people with dignity, how vengeance is wrong. It's not the way we solve problems. We're having to fight those battles and re-articulate those arguments now. And you and Turning Point and Falkirk Center, you're at the head of that. And I can't tell you how grateful I am that you're on campuses. I'm amazed.
Well, thank you. Yeah. And just to kind of, people wonder, where did this come from? I'm getting lots of messages from people in their 50s, 60s, and 70s. What America is this? I said, if you have sent a kid to a university, if you have funded a university through your donations, if you pay tax dollars indirectly, you are subsidizing the ideologues and the left-wing radicals that have created the 11,000 individuals that have been arrested in the last 72 hours in America. Did you know that, Eric? 11,000 people have been arrested. I was actually happy to see that we're finally arresting these people.
Right. But, and you know, though, Charlie, that 11,000 is a drop in the bucket. I mean, when you saw what was going on, it ought to have been far more than that. And I think, look, you and I agree violently on this. Universities in America today have become a tremendous force against everything that America stands for.
Yes.
That has happened. And now it didn't happen overnight, but it's been building. It's kind of the trickle down effect, the long march through the institutions. Yale was horrible when I was there in the 80s, but it still had elements that it no longer has. Most universities today are preaching this kind of thing that we're talking about. It's like a wokeness, to the nth degree. And most people who give money, I'm staggered that anyone would give a dime ever to a university. It's an amazing, amazing.
Well, it literally is. And here's my working thesis, Eric. I'm writing a long essay on this, and I hope I can land the plane on it. But I theorized in early April that they wanted to turn America into a big college campus. Don't leave your dorm, safe spaces. We're going to take care of you, microaggressions. And, we're going to go after people that might say something you disagree with. And I think this actually comes full circle, because what else happens on a college campus? We go protest things that actually don't exist. I mean, you go protest because here's the other point, and this is a much longer conversation, but these upper middle class suburban individuals that are mostly the ones protesting, not the black kids, not our beautiful black community that are the ones that are actually, struggling to get by because of big government programs and public sector teacher unions. No, the people that are doing the arson are actually, look at the arrest records, the people that are actually burning down the building, these are upper middle class suburban white individuals. Why? It's because they've never had a rite of passage. They've had no hero's journey. They've been given everything in their life. There's nothing wrong with that. A lot of people listen to this show, I'm sure, have kids in that circumstance. But they've never been told that there's value and there's a moral component to earned success. Instead, it's the exact opposite. They've been told the world is ending in 10 years because of climate change. There's no such thing as God. Just engage in hedonistic nihilism. Secularism is the way to go. Who wouldn't want to burn the world down if you started to believe in that stuff? And so that is what you're seeing come full fruition.
That's very, very well put. And I hope you do write that essay quickly. Charlie, what you just said, I remember when I was in college, I bought into this to some extent, not entirely, but I did buy into it. And I remember the emotion, the rage against who was it at the time? Vice President George Bush, who'd been to Skull and Bones and had, you know, wealth and privilege. And what you're taught, okay, is that you want to identify with the worker. You want solidarity with the, you know, the waitress at the crappy bar down the street. You want to be like them. You want to be one of them. And we see that in culture where very wealthy white kids, you know, dress like black kids in the ghetto, you know, but we're seeing this now ideologically that people say, like, I want to be part of the mob that's doing something, because they believe this is solidarity with the downtrodden. Well, they actually believe it.
Yeah, and there's two components to this, and that's the generous interpretation. And I think there's some people that believe that. But some of the individuals that do this, and I know that we have a hard break and I can get back to it, so I'll just kind of foreshadow that there are two big things. One is that people do it because it makes them feel good. It doesn't actually do good. And the second component is that they have no meaning in life because they have no responsibility. And therefore, this gives them meaning. That Molotov cocktail was a power trip for them, unlike anything they could possibly imagine. But they're not married. They have no kids. They have no responsibility. Right. And most of them don't have jobs. And then, Eric, when we get back, I'll talk about how I think the lockdown contributed to this greatly.
Terrific. Folks, I'm talking to Charlie Kirk, Turning Point Foundation, Falkirk Center. This is the Eric Metaxas Show. Don't go away. And why would you? My goodness. Christian bestselling author and speaker Richard E. Simmons does not shy away from the big questions of life. His latest book is called Reflections on the Existence of God, and it tackles the biggest question of all, does God exist? I've read this book, and I got to tell you, I'm a little biased, but you can imagine that I like it a lot, because Simmons offers insights for those grappling with life's biggest questions. Where do we find meaning in life? Who determines what is evil? Can we be moral without God? Does God even exist? Former White House aide Wallace Henley says, I've taught apologetics for many years and I've read every scholar mentioned in this book. Of all the books on apologetics, Simmons is the best I have ever read. This book is easy to read because it's divided into a series of brief essays, perfect for a devotional or discussion with a friend. I highly recommend that you add a copy of Reflections on the Existence of God to your pandemic reading list. Simmons asks questions that speak directly to one of the most important things you possess, your worldview. Folks, you know how important this is to me. Your worldview is going to impact the way you live your life for better or for worse. If you want to challenge yourself to spiritual and intellectual growth, and I hope you do, then be willing to ask yourself life's toughest questions. Dive in today by picking up a copy of Reflections on the Existence of God right now. Go to existenceofgodbook.com. That's existenceofgodbook.com. Folks, I'm talking to Charlie Kirk. Charlie, we could talk about anything. We can talk about what the president has been saying. I am just fascinated, I have to say, how no matter what he says, I mean, look, there are times that he says things or doesn't say things, and I think critically of him. I think I wish he would have said this. I wish he wouldn't have said that. But it seems like the media grabs whatever that is, and they talk about it for the next 40 hours. It's extraordinary. I mean, it's absolutely a kind of craziness that has overtaken them.
No, it's pathological. That's the only way that you can describe it. And you have an entire journalistic class, which should no longer be called journalists. And I try to be, and I pray, because I think words are so important. I try to be specific in my language. I call them the activist media in all my tweets. I don't call them the mainstream media. I think we need to call them the activist media. And I encourage all of your listeners to adopt that language, because that's really what they are, is that they're no different than the people marching in the streets. They just have a verified Twitter account and they have a column in the New York Times. There's no difference in ideology. There's no difference in practice. The only difference actually is how they exhibit it. And so I do want to kind of mention what I foreshadowed previously, Eric, which is that I believe that the lockdown, which is going to go down as one of the worst mistakes in American history, and not what the president did. The president was terrific. He left it to the states. He said, you guys do your own thing, exhibited by South Dakota that never locked down and President Trump never interfered. So South Dakota is the greatest example that Trump cannot be blamed for the lockdown.
Right.
So the lockdown was one of the worst mistakes in American history. It's pretty well admitted and acknowledge that suicide rates are now going up dramatically. More people have been committed suicide than died of the Chinese coronavirus in California. Drug usage, marijuana usage, alcoholism, anxiety, all those things are rapidly going up. I conjectured on a podcast on the Charlie Kirk Show. I said, I don't think it's a good thing when 41 million people are out of work, temperatures are rising in America, sports are not on TV, men can't socialize and go meet other women. I said, this is social unrest waiting to happen. I said that, and journalists said that I'm predicting, apocalyptic, and now all of a sudden that the world is literally burning. It, of course, you get no credit for it. I'm not searching for credit, but it's pretty obvious that when you keep 41 million people that have no jobs, they can't go to their social institutions, so they can't go to church, they can't blow off steam by going to the gym, which literally with young men that are filled with massive amounts of chemical testosterone, you put all these things away and all of a sudden we're surprised that they're burning down the planet. No, they're actually, these things existed for very utilitarian reasons. Like sports, for me, are a way for me to escape the world and see someone else do something excellent, going to the theater, going to movies. These things have had a utility that we've discounted for years. They took them away, I think, to try to bring up the temperature in our country so that social unrest, unfortunately, could be made easier.
I feel that way about my macrame club. Isn't that like a classic Greg Gutfeld joke? Okay, so what you're saying, Charlie, of course makes sense. Now, the question is, it was one thing to face the tremendous economic devastation of this COVID thing. Now we have this going on. It's just hard to believe that this followed that and that we are now having to deal with rioting and looting and a lack of safety. We've never been here.
Well, and I'm glad you've used that word safety, because for the last couple of months, I've heard nothing but we have to keep you safe.
Yeah.
As if the most important thing on the planet was keeping you in your home. I mean, if 2 weeks ago I was going on shows like yours, Eric, talking about why Mayor Eric Garcetti was a tyrant for leaving us all in our homes. Now I'm talking about why Mayor Eric Garcetti is nowhere to be seen when people are out in the streets burning down civilization. So everyone listening to this needs to realize, they say, well, isn't that contradictory? Like, no, no, no. This is perfectly consistent for the left, because authoritarians need chaos to justify their tyranny. They need chaos to be able to justify their authoritarianism. And you see this through different cycles of whether, and we can use an example that gets very misinterpreted by the activist media, which is the kulaks under the Soviet Union, which is literally Stalin went and he said, you own too much property, I'm going to get rid of you. And then chaos ensued because of that. And he said, oh, wow, there's a civil war brewing, I'm going to assume more responsibility. And that's an awfully brutal example. I'm not necessarily comparing some of our governors and leaders to Stalinists, but you can fill in the gaps.
The only difference between them and Stalin, let's be honest, is the mustache. Okay, so what you were just talking about, I have to say, I'm an advocate of Second Amendment advocate, but I have never felt genuinely enough fear to where I thought I need a gun. But I read an article, I think Sohrab Amari wrote it in the Post this morning, about what happened Monday night. Now, you live in a building in New York City. You have no confidence that the cops will keep you safe. The doormen don't have guns. Anything can happen. And so in a normal world, a guy like me has a gun because he says, well, look, in case anything crazy happens, it's okay. I've got a gun. But most people in New York like me don't have guns. And so suddenly you're a sitting duck. You can't defend yourself. And I thought to myself, imagine if all of these looters and people knew that there are a lot of people out there that have guns, they would behave differently, you know? And so there's something to be said for
being yourself.
And I see it now in New York City.
And we can continue this as the show goes on. The looting is not going to happen in Midland, Texas anytime soon. That's all I have to say.
That's kind of the point. And the cynicism of these looters, I have to say, it's absolutely grotesque. They are piggybacking on the protests and they're committing these crimes. We're going to go to break. We'll be right back with Charlie Kirk. Don't go away.
In New York City.
Folks, welcome back. I'm talking to Charlie Kirk. Charlie, let's talk about this president. He is facing genuinely unprecedented difficulties right now with the economy. He didn't, you know, create the what are we calling it now? We were calling it the Kung Flu pandemic. Is that the right term?
Or the Wuhan flu or the China virus? I started with China virus. The president retweeted me and never looked back. So I like China virus.
Wow. And I like activist media much better than lamestream media. I've always thought that lamestream media was itself lame. And I'm a writer, so I get to make those kinds of judgments. So we're going to go with activist media. But this president, seriously, I mean, the other day he held a Bible in front of St. John's Church, and they piled on as though he had held up Mein Kampf. It's just the most bizarre. Well, we're living in the strangest times.
Well, and it wasn't just the activists that poured on him. It was the bishop of the archdiocese that poured on him. Now, I'm not sure how the episcopate.
Excuse me, young man. Let me explain to you. The Episcopal Church, except for a few parishes around America, they went over the cliff decades ago.
No, I think that's
They invented woke. So trust me, I heard her. It was a woman, right?
I don't think we're supposed to assume the bishop's gender.
But it was a woman, and I heard her speaking, and I thought to myself, if ever you want to know whom to ignore, well, Episcopal bishops are at the top of the list. Forgive me.
I'm also a writer, nowhere near as accomplished as you, but I'm a really big believer in stories that have created Western society. And so I'm also really partial to imagery and metaphors. And so I look at President Trump storm Lafayette Park with total open air, the first time I've seen a president do that in my lifetime, holding the book that built Western society, reclaiming the church that was trying to be burnt by the arsonists, holding it up and saying, this book matters. This book is what we have to get back to. I'm going to proclaim it in the face of the most evil aspects of society, almost challenging them head on. It was the hero's journey right across that park. And I said, this is beautiful. This will bring America together. This will be terrific. Who could miss the imagery? And then I watched my Twitter feed, and you know, which I try not to do too much, and the cable news, and people say, how dare he hold up the Bible? I said, this is really not good. And I wish I had better words than that, Eric. And usually I do, but I mean, this is so troubling, the direction this is headed. And this is more than Orwellian. I mean, this is something where you have pathological ideologues that are now committed to destroying the opposition at all costs. And Trump has brought them to this point. We call it Trump derangement syndrome. And I think there's some truth to that, but I think it's even deeper and more sinister than that. This is now American destruction syndrome, where at all costs, they want to see our country be totally deconstructed. And so the good news of Trump is it's exposed their radicalism. The bad news is that if he loses, these radicals now have full license to be who they say they are because their masks have now been unmasked. And so the stakes have never been higher.
Yeah. Well, there's no question about that. But it's funny, Charlie, what I'm guessing at is that, you know, when you do watch the media or you read Twitter, that is that's the chattering class, even Fox or whatever. I mean, I'm just saying that generally speaking, your average American, they don't talk that much. They see what's going on. They're trying to raise their kids. They're working hard. Mm-hmm. They have the common sense that knows what's what. When push comes to shove, whether the ideology is something they can articulate or isn't, they have a basic instinct. And I kind of think that the COVID madness, the shutdown madness, and what is happening now is radicalizing in the right direction a lot of people that were on the fence who never really voted for Trump before.
Well, I'll say so politically, let's just talk about how Trump can benefit from this politically. I mean, there's been this whole thing about how suburban women don't support Donald Trump. We know through past political, you know, cycles, suburban women will vote for safety. I mean, the whole idea that, oh, yeah, we have to let people riot and loot and protest. This goes back to a very fundamental maternal instinct. And there's nothing wrong with this. Actually, it's wonderful. They want to protect their nest. They want to protect what they and their nest is their children. It's their home. It's their community. And if you tell them, well, we have to give these people space to go burn down our civilization, you know, they might be really quick to go post the black square on Instagram. And then a couple days later, when the Panera Bread down the street is on fire and little Johnny's soccer camp is all of a sudden being looted by rioters, and then all of a sudden the Starbucks that they get their macchiatos at, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. I'm just, you know, basically saying that this is a pattern of behavior we know to be true. All of a sudden that the windows are smashed there, maybe they'll recognize and realize that you need a president that is forcefully on the side of civil society.
Well, I guess that's the point. You know, if your boyfriend is a woke metrosexual, times like these make him a little bit less attractive. I guess I was going to say that, you know, when you talk about that, let's talk for a second about Joe Biden. He has been forced to take on the rhetoric of AOC and the crazies. And it's a very bizarre thing to see a man who has been in power since 1969. That's not a typo, folks.
He's the change candidate, Eric.
Yeah, he's the candidate for change. That's right. And so if you, but I mean, can you imagine that he has been in power? He has wielded tremendous power as vice president and as senator for literally decades. But he is now mouthing things that are the antithesis of what he has stood for.
Well, look, I mean, for those of us that love American cinema and literature, he is the ultimate Manchurian candidate, like literally. I mean, and he is a shell of an individual. I mean, everything he espouses is provided to him by radical leftists that look at this as an opportunity to storm the Bastille. And we can get into that, as I know we're getting up tight on time.
You know, you're too sophisticated media wise, so don't let my engineer throw you with his little he James.
No, I take that very seriously. I want to make sure that
he gives us that signal when we have a full minute left. That's an eternity in radio.
It's a long time in radio. You can make a clear and concise argument Biden is corrupt.
I'll give you 25 seconds. How's that?
Well, look, Joe Biden is the most corrupt vice president in American history. He can't distinguish his wife from his sister, doesn't know what state he's in, doesn't know what president he served with, doesn't even know what country he sold us out to so his son could get rich. He's the perfect candidate for ideologues to take over our country.
Very well said. We'll be right back, folks, with one final segment with Charlie Kirk. Don't go away.
That old wheel is gonna roll around once more. When it does, it will even up the score.
Don't be weak. As they sow, they will reap. Turn the other cheek and don't give in.
That old wheel will roll around again.
Yes, sir.
Hey, folks, welcome back. I'm talking to Charlie Kirk. Charlie, one of the most disturbing things I've seen recently is some of these activists who are clearly bullies. I mean, there's a violence. You can feel it, that they're very angry and they're approaching strangers on the street and demanding that these strangers take a knee or that the cops take a knee. And there is something about it that, you know, I'm not going to compare it directly to 30s Germany, but it's kind of like if you don't say Heil Hitler, we're going to report you. Like you had better get on board. And I just think I've never seen anything so ugly that cops are being yelled at to take a knee. I mean, they should say, well, I'll take a knee. If you take a knee for Jesus Christ, you go first.
Yeah, that's a phenomenal point, and I'm going to use it, which is, you know, these are people that won't kneel for God, but they'll kneel because of some sort of pre-described class guilt. And so this is really important point, Eric, which is this whole idea of white privilege is a racist and sinister lie that is taught to our kids from a very, very young age. And I find the entire the whole idea morally reprehensible, that your identity, your skin color, that's not even your identity, by the way, that's just your appearance. Let's just make that very clear, that identity actually can mean a lot more. It could be your thoughts, your feelings, your worldview. And actually what has made the West so different, which was an idea that Jesus talked about, and people don't recognize this, is that equality under the law was nowhere to be seen. I mean, the Roman Republic paled in comparison to the Christian ethic when Christ said, no, you're all equal under the eyes of God. we just forget and we just throw that all out in our society. That's why Trump holding up that Bible was so significant, because he was saying, this is what we proclaim right here, that we're actually all the same. We have total depravity and sin under God. And of course, the secular media comes after him in such a sinister way. But the reason why people are willing to kneel and the reason why these mobs are going around, Eric, is that we should, it's this idea of white privilege. They've been told that you, despite you never owning a slave, despite you never knowing anyone that has owned a slave, despite maybe your ancestors fought on the Union side of the Civil War like my ancestors did. So wait a second. I have to go apologize because my ancestors put their lives on the line to liberate slaves. My bloodline in Chicago, like from the Midwest originally, we fought in the Civil War. So what do I have to apologize for? My family were Republican activists in the 20s and 30s fighting for Black voting rights. My family was the one in the 1960s literally standing with people trying to expand the Civil Rights Act. So the point being, Eric, is I have nothing to apologize for. And I, even if I was from a bad lineage, I have nothing to apologize for because I'm an individual. Final thing is this, is Eric, is that in the feudal system, if your father screwed up, your family could have intergenerational karmic debt, meaning the king would say, for five generations, you shall be put out to the sea.
Right.
This is a return to feudalism, Eric. The idea of Western societies, it doesn't really matter what your parents did. Who are you?
Well, see, this, of course, is a Christian idea, right? And that was the idea that you can repent and be totally forgiven. Yes. God wants us to have a clean slate, to identify what's wrong, to change it, to repent, to be forgiven and free. And these people are preaching a narrative of eternal condemnation. By the way, Satan the accuser, that's what he does. He reminds you of what you did wrong over and over and over and over and over and over. And what our response should be, yes, I know, and Jesus knows, and he forgave me. Thank you very much. And by the way, you know, we said 250 years ago, the revolutionaries said, we have no king but Jesus. Today, when somebody says, take a knee, I think we can say, I will kneel for no one but Jesus. I think that it's an apt way to respond. Unfortunately, Charlie, we're out of time. We'll have you on next week. Thank you, my friend.